What's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Periodic Table. This is the weekly science news show we do over here at my YouTube channel, where we just, well, talk about the hottest science news stories of the week. And are we experts by any means? Most of the time, no, but that's okay, because this is one big virtual science classroom and we are all learning together at the same time. And that's really what it's all about. And I love doing this show every week. I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. I am a mechanical engineer. You might know me also as a host formerly at AfterBuzz TV or the Popcorn Talk Network, or you might also know me from the movie Trivia Schmodown. But I am not alone today. I have an amazing guest. You might have seen him as the host, the creator, the inspiration of his own inspiration, if that's a thing people say.
It's happening now.
He is the host of Chew on This. It is Michael Chu. Welcome to the show.
What is up, Brandon? Thank you for having me. That was the best introduction I've had on any show that I've been on so far, and I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. You know, I really try my best. Normally, it's just me kind of doing a Michael Scott where I start a sentence, and I just hope I find the words along the way.
That one was good. Inspiration from the inspiration. I love it.
Perfect. I'm glad you're on board. I'm super excited to talk science with you today. We've got a great show. We have a story about scientists burying 2,000 pairs of underpants in Switzerland. We're going to talk about that. Why are they doing this? We also have a new technique that can make some plastic trash compostable at home, which is kind of a big deal. We all know about plastic waste. We all grew up in school learning about litter and pollution and all that. So this could be a game changer. We're going to talk about it. And of course, we do have a special segment, something I'm calling Mars Mission Report. We're going to talk about all the latest and greatest news coming from the Perseverance rover over on Mars. There's a lot of exciting experiments going on the red planet, and I can't wait to just get up to date with everything going on with you guys, because it's super exciting. But before we do, let's jump all the way back up to our number one story for the week, and it's, why are scientists burying 2,000 pairs of underpants in Switzerland? This one is coming from Science Focus, guys, and as always, the links to all the articles are in the description down below if you want to check it out and read more for yourself. I highly encourage you, go down that Wikipedia rabbit hole and learn everything you can, because that's what this is all about, once again, learning. So, but guys, news in briefs, as the article says, a study codenamed Proof by Underpants is underway in Switzerland, where researchers are sending thousands of pairs of white cotton underwear to volunteers who will bury them in the garden, in their own gardens. And believe it or not, it's a cutting edge way to measure soil health. So I feel like our first two stories are going to be a little bit related in some
ways.
But scientists from the State Research Institute Agroscope will later dig up the soiled unmentionables and analyze them. And they'll look to the extent to which tiny organisms in the earth have eaten away at the fabric. And apparently, the holier, the better. So before we dive any further into this pair of underpants, I do want to throw it over to you, Michael. What was your overall thoughts when you were reading this article? Did you learn anything new? Did it inspire you to do some research of your own? Like, what are your thoughts on the status of burying 2,000 pairs of underpants?
Yeah, first of all, it's a lot. It's a lot of underwear. I think the article said, was it two pairs for every volunteer, was it?
Two pairs. I believe it says here that one of the pairs will be dug up sooner than the other. Yeah. I'm trying to see the exact timetable, unfortunately. Oh, here we go. The first one will be dug up after 1 month, and the second one will be dug up after 2 months.
Yeah, so first of all, this whole thing is insane, because when I first read, got sent this article from Brandon, obviously, I'm very immature. I'm a boy still. I'm not a man yet. So the term soiled unmentionables was immediately the first thing that popped out to me.
There's no age limit on that.
There was no helping it. So immediately my first thought was that they were doing some type of experiment trying to use like human waste residue for fertilizer or something disgusting of that nature. I'm very glad that it isn't that, and instead we're trying to figure out what exactly is in the soil. It's crazy though to think that we can just gauge what organisms are doing what based off of the holes that they're creating. It's crazy. And my other thought was, somehow underwear companies are going to use this as some publicity stunt in the future. I'm almost certain of it.
Yeah, it almost seems like it for sure. But apparently, the more you go down this article, the more I noticed anyway, I didn't realize how little is apparently known about the soil and the ecosystem within. It says here that the soil is home to billions of bacteria, fungi, insects, worms, and other creatures. I don't know what those other creatures might be.
Honestly, that stuck out to me as well.
But it does say that little is known about their ecosystem and how it affects things like crop yields and food protection, which obviously is very important to, I don't know, the sustainability of human life on this planet.
Just this planet. Yeah.
Something I didn't know, it said apart from the waistband and the seams, our test pants, that's an interesting way to refer to them, are made from 100% biodegradable organic cotton, and it serves as a food source for various microorganisms. What are your thoughts on that, Michael?
They're literally eating, as Bart Simpson will say, eating shorts right now. They're eating pants underground as food. That's crazy. My immediate thought is who's the first person that tried this and found out that this was actually working? Is that a specific job? Is that someone that was just a scientist that said, I'm just going to try making this new underwear and throwing it in the ground? But it's crazy what can be used as food for these organisms. What's more curious is discovering, I guess, what's actually doing the eating. What don't we know? The vastness of this unexplored ecosystem being discovered through underwear is just amazing.
Yeah, it is truly incredible. Like that potentially underwear can teach us so much about a field of science that we have yet to tap into its full potential of our understanding. Underpants of all things. I mean, like you said, you know, it's kind of be fun to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. To me, I'm wondering, I'm like, okay, they found a way to test the soil health, to understand better the ecosystems of the various bacteria and insects in the dirt. And they were like, yes, actually 100% cotton is the perfect way to do this. But like, where are we going to get a bunch of random cotton fabric from? And then somebody was probably like, guys, there's a sale on underwear.
We got the Hanes sale going on down the street.
It's already made.
It's time.
We don't have to make anything. The legwork is already done, literally.
Crazy. So crazy.
It is. But another interesting thing, and it says here in the last paragraph of the article, the citizen science aspect of the project is designed to raise awareness of global soil erosion. Increased use of fertilizers and construction are thought to be two of the major factors accelerating the loss of fertile soils, as well as habitat loss. This can lead to poorer protection against natural disasters and increased levels of chemicals seeping into streams and rivers. So it seems like in addition to the hopefully vast amount of scientific research and better understanding of the soil that the scientists are going to collect from this data and learn more from these pairs of underpants. Yeah. It seems also this is serving as a way to raise more awareness about soil health and the implications of what we do to the soil, how we pollute the soil, and what we can better do to have more fertile soil to not just help with food growth, but even potentially natural disasters and raising awareness, literally two pairs of underwear at a time, I guess, per volunteer. And then, of course, to everyone who reads the article and watches this stream here today. So, guys, I hope we've helped raise some of this awareness. this seemed like a really fun story, I thought, to headline our show today.
Absolutely.
It's short, sweet, to the point. It's an easy read, but there's a lot to unpack here, a lot to unravel. I definitely learned something new from it. Michael, did you learn something new from this article today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And going back to the awareness element, once again, I had no idea that we were so ill-informed, or I guess uninformed, about the organisms beneath us, the earth beneath us, and the ripple effect that soil erosion is causing. We need to protect this earth. It's crazy to think that something as small as underwear being put in the ground is gonna possibly make a huge difference in how we approach this conversation in the future. I was just thinking too, in the science books in the future, if this becomes like the thing that's gonna set the stone for soil erosion research, are they gonna teach us about this underwear in the future? You think our kids gonna be learning about it this way, Brandon?
I don't know. This could be, I think, a fun science experiment to do at home, potentially.
I was thinking the same.
You know, we kind of have like a little, like, almost like a garden out front out of our apartment complex here. I wonder if I were to just sneak a couple pairs of underwear a few feet down, see what happens.
Please, and I can
maybe
let...
Maybe I can get a little bit off my rent. Be like, you guys want to learn more about your soil health? Like, this is what you got.
Hey, you're protecting this complex from the dangers of future natural disasters by doing this. It's the first step.
Exactly. But no, in all seriousness, this was a great read, guys. If you're interested in learning more, like I said, link is in the description down below to this article. I would love to check back in on this story down the road and see what was uncovered from all this research. I think this would be a fun one to keep tabs on.
I feel like you picked the right articles for like a future episode to do just an entire recap on all of this stuff, because everything is just setting up for something bigger in the future, for crazier research. So thank you for having me on, man. This is awesome.
Oh yeah, no, I'm glad you're already having a good time. We're only about a third of a way through here.
Let's go.
A lot more fun to be had, a lot more science to be had. And like you said, I always like try to pick stories that we can revisit down the road. That's kind of what we're doing with our special segment this week, but we've got a little bit of ways to get to that. I want to jump into our next story for today, but before I do, I just want to thank everyone currently watching at home. If you're watching on replay, thank you so much for watching. We have Raul Alejandro Mendoza in the chat. He's been on this channel before as part of a Brandon Hanna Live, amazing, talented filmmaker. Extra,
absolutely.
He's got a great mind for film. So
One of the best.
Join him on this show once a month, guys. Go check out his stuff. Nerdy Chicano, free plug for you there, Raul. We also, of course, have Sabrina Ramirez in the chat as always, and William Belford saying, "What's up, science geeks?" And a surprise for me here, we have Joe Benoit in the chat. Joe is an old engineering school buddy of mine, and he's saying that I had science classes with Brandon, and this is no act. He's this excited about science on and off camera. Oh, well, I appreciate that, Joe. That really means a lot. Guys, I definitely did not pay Joe to say this today to up my
credibility. That was a free plug right there, Brandon.
That was honestly a free plug. Give a free plug, get a free plug. That's the way we do it.
Exactly.
A rising tide raises all ships, guys. Mm-hmm, let's build this community up together. I know we can do it. But guys, if you're watching, friendly reminder, please hit that like button if you're enjoying today's content. Like I said, leave a comment down below, or if you're watching live in the live chat, you want to be a part of the conversation, like, let us know your thoughts. And also hit that subscribe button, guys. Maybe that little notification bell as well, so you don't miss a thing, because we're talking about science every single week on this channel with an amazing variety of hosts and guests that are coming on. And you're not going to want to miss what we've got coming up in the future. Super excited to have you all here. Let's jump into our next story.
Here we go.
I was hoping for a smoother transition, but you know, sometimes it just doesn't pay off. But
that worked. Come on.
What might pay off is a new technique that can make some plastic trash compostable at home. And this story comes from Science News, and it says a pinch of Palmer munching enzymes. My pronunciation on this show is bad. Let me try this again. A pinch of Palmer munching enzymes could make biodegradable plastic packaging and forks truly compostable. With moderate heat, enzyme-laced films of the plastic disintegrated in standard compost or plain tap water within days to weeks. So this is, I think, a really, really fascinating article, and kind of like ties into the story we were just talking about pollution, about litter, about soil health in general. Obviously, plastic litter is a huge problem, as this article touches on. There's a lot of plastic out there that is biodegradable. It kind of breaks down into tiny little pieces, but all it really does is break down into smaller pieces of the same plastic that just cause a lot of harm to the environment. And so there's apparently this new technique of basically just infusing these enzymes into the plastic makes them actually compostable. The article talks about, they even had a photo that I don't have here, but I do have another photo for you guys. They even had a photo showing the plastic in water. And after a certain period of time, the plastic completely dissolved into water. But the photo that I do have for you guys here is this fella that you can see. Now, the caption on this photo says, in experiments, enzyme-laced plastic film, which is on the left-hand side of the image, broke down after 3 days in compost. And after 2 weeks, it disintegrated entirely. So there you have it, guys. That is, I mean, to disintegrate entirely into compost, I mean, that is potentially a big deal. If this is something that we can utilize in all of our plastics that, you know, you go and get Chinese takeout, you get a plastic fork or even plastic water bottles, probably, although I don't know how the water would hold up inside of it. Biodegrades inside of water, but we'll figure that one out eventually, guys. But before I do my typical rambling on that I love to do on this show, let's throw it over to Michael. What were your overall thoughts on this article? Did anything really stand out to you as being particularly interesting that really excited your scientific mind?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the future potential of this. I mean, you and I both live in the general LA vicinity and we see litter constantly, right? All the time. So to think that this could possibly be used with more than just this specific type of plastic in the future with all plastics is crazy to think that, you know, slowly over time, like this type of pollution from plastics won't be an issue, but currently it is. They're trying their best. I think in the article it said that they've very patented the enzyme, correct? So they're on their way to trying out more and possibly, who knows, like you said, maybe they're going to figure out with water bottles next. Maybe it's going to be Chinese takeout, but we're one step closer to eliminating this problem, which is awesome, thankfully. And like you said, it ties back into the first article. We just need to protect our Earth. We live here still. We still live here.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, this is like one step towards hopefully something much greater. You know, the article does touch on embedding polymer chomping enzymes into biodegradable plastic should accelerate decomposition, but that process often inadvertently forms potentially harmful microplastics, which is kind of like what I mentioned earlier. But we do have, and I want to try to give this scientist credit, and I know I'm going to butcher your name, but I apologize, Ting Zhu. So her team added individual enzymes into two biodegradable plastics, including polylactic acid, commonly used in food packaging. And they inserted the enzymes along with another ingredient, which was a degradable additive that Zoo previously developed. Like you said, that there were like, you know, this was like an invention, which ensured the enzymes didn't clump together and didn't fall apart. And the solitary enzymes grabbed the ends of the plastic's molecular chains and ate as though they were slurping spaghetti, as the article says.
The visual that provided was fantastic.
Yes, great visuals. And it says severing every chain link and preventing microplastic formation. So it seems like Ting Zhu and her team were able to take a process that we already have in place for our plastics, which makes them biodegradable, but we have this issue of clumping and just smaller, tiny little plastic pieces forming everywhere and not actually being compostable into the soil. But Zoo has developed this degradable additive that actually prevents them from clumping together and actually helps them compost into the soil. So this is a really like groundbreaking invention, to say the least. But it does say this technology doesn't work on all plastics because there's different varying molecular structures and there's these limitations that Zoo and her team have to overcome. But, you know, like we touched on, she's filed a patent application because definitely do that.
Yes, definitely.
Definitely do that. I mean, not only are you going to help us toward a better world, but, you know, you might make a bit of coin along the way, which I highly encourage. No, but all jokes aside, this is one crazy, this is just a, I'm like overwhelmed. This is just crazy implications. And like they say, there's a quote here that says, we want this to be in every grocery store. And I couldn't agree more. I know that you're in agreement, Michael. Is there any other thoughts that you had regarding this article? Anything that we didn't touch on? Anything that stuck out to you that made you want to learn more about compost and soil and biodegradable plastics. I know, very interesting topics.
It honestly, it is now, and I appreciate these articles. Mm-hmm. I mean, like we touched on, the visuals that these articles are providing make it a lot more digestible for sure. But touching on this one, it's crazy to think that people are creating enzymes with unknown effects. Like we don't know what that's like initially when they tried it out with the plastics, how many failed enzymes they probably had, how many years this has probably taken to get to this point. So Zoo, please get your money. You must for this. And I think that, you know, slowly over time, more and more people are going to start, as we're doing right now, discussing this topic, doing more research into the ripple effects of our soil health. And slowly, I think we're moving toward this being a commonplace thing where we're hopefully having multiple biodegradable sources of disposal for our goods that we drink and consume and whatnot.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, to go back to that photo, I'll bring it up one more time for you guys. To go back to this photo and the caption that was tied with it, 2 weeks it took for this plastic film as it started out on the left. And what you see on the right is 3 days into the compost. 2 weeks in total, it disintegrated entirely. We're talking about 2 weeks of something that...
Seriously.
I mean, plastic, like, I mean, how many times did I hear this in elementary school from teachers, how long it takes plastic to biodegrade in the soil? Like hundreds, thousands of years, potentially. and we're talking about 2 weeks for not only to be biodegradable, but compostable. That is, I find that is truly incredible. It's almost, if I didn't see it in this article, if somebody just told me, it'd be
seriously
too good to be true. To me, it's like, but that's the beauty of science. Like, that's why scientists do what they do. That's, you know, why we do this show, because I mean, this is an amazing story that I don't know if I would have saw if I wasn't hosting this show every week.
Yeah. Thank you, Brandon, for educating us, dude.
No, don't thank me. I'm just a guy with an engineering degree who's trying to sound a little smarter than he is.
That picture is crazy. How long would you have thought that was in the soil if you didn't know it was 3 days?
Years. Definitely years.
Honestly, right? Exactly.
Honestly, I almost even thought they were two different plastics at first.
That was my first thought. I had to read it again. I thought that was showing the different types of plastic they were using.
I think I read that caption three times before I finally realized what exactly was going on. It is truly remarkable. And this is, of course, another story that I can't wait to follow up on. Mm-hmm. And that's just... I'm trying to think of something else to say about it, but I think we just about covered everything.
It's just so crazy.
It's left me speechless. But guys, go and check out the article for yourself if you'd like. It is truly a great invention, and I can't wait to see how it progresses further. Mm. But speaking of inventions, plural inventions that are here and now and doing amazing things. Well, they're on Mars. Okay. And we have a couple stories today I wanted to talk about, because Mars's Perseverance rover that recently landed, we talked about it on this show. I had Sabrina here with me. We talked about Perseverance landing on Mars and how incredible that is and all the cool things that we were waiting to see, all the cool experiments. And the two amazing developments recently, we have the Ingenuity helicopter making its third flight. And that's just crazy, because like, it seems like just yesterday we were talking about like, oh my God, okay, it's got to come out of the rover and the rover's got to like drive away. And like, it looks like there was like something wrong with the hatch, like fell on the ground. And we were like, oh my God, like, is this thing going to fly? Is this thing going to work? They were having software issues. I was getting nervous. I'm sure they were getting nervous over at NASA. It's their baby. Sure.
Absolutely.
But now we're here. It's already on its third flight. And this story about Ingenuity in particular comes directly from NASA, guys. And it says here that NASA's Ingenuity Mars helicopter continues to set records, flying faster and farther on Sunday, April 25th, So like literally just yesterday, then in any test, the person doing the show on the Monday for the first time, am I right, guys?
Here we are.
Then it flied faster and further than any test that it's ever done here on Earth, like let alone on Mars. Like they didn't even try this out on Earth, which for reasons we can get into in a little bit. But the helicopter took off at 4:31 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Which was 12:33 p.m. local Mars time, if you guys are keeping track, rising 16 feet or 5 meters in the air, which is the same altitude it had on its second flight. But then it did something a little different. It zipped downrange 164 feet or 50 meters, just over half the length of a football field, reaching a top speed of 6.6 feet per second or 2 meters per second. So this is really remarkable, and the scientists and engineers over at NASA, they are already digging through a trove of information gathered during this third flight that will inform not just additional Ingenuity flights, but possible Mars rotorcraft in the future, which has me particularly excited. Like, what other kinds of helicopters are we going to put on Mars in the future? Will astronauts be able to fly helicopters on Mars in the future?
Dude, yeah.
I did not want to go to Mars if I had the opportunity. Moon, yes, because I could see Earth from the moon. I could see my house from the moon. I'd be like, okay, it's there. It's not on fire. We're good. Mars is significantly further away. That scares me that that's going to be a one-way trip. But if you could promise me that I could fly a helicopter on Mars... Now you have my interest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is really cool. And we have a quote here from Dave Lavery, the project's program executive for Ingenuity at NASA's headquarters in Washington. He said, "Today's flight was what we planned for, and yet it was nothing short of amazing. With this flight, we are demonstrating critical capabilities that will enable the addition of an aerial dimension to the future of Mars missions," which is exactly what I'm talking about. This is what I'm here for. Before we go any further, Michael, let's turn it over to you. Do you agree? Are you just as excited for the aerial future of Mars missions as I am?
This is so crazy because immediately when I was reading this, I was just thinking about Halo, the video game series. And I was like, those dudes are flying whole like cargo planes and stuff in space. This is going to happen. Like this is the first step into getting people in like full on helicopters on Mars and, you know, roaming the surface and in a cool whip. That's awesome. It's also crazy that this isn't a big deal. Like this isn't something that just like common knowledge at this point that they're taking this thing off in general, even for the first two flights. Without this show, I mean, I wouldn't have known about that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's insane to think that they have been able to get a craft to physically take flight on Mars, and the possibilities that all of these stories open are amazing. And hopefully we'll be flying and cruising in the skies of Mars one day, Brandon, in the helicopter.
Definitely. You're there as my co-pilot. I'm manifesting it happening.
Let's do it, man.
But I also, before I forget, I do have a video of the third flight.
Yeah.
Because one of the other amazing things about the Perseverance rover, for the first time, we have like high definition video and sound being recorded on the surface of Mars. Before, we've had to deal with these beautiful, and they're gorgeous, high definition panoramic photos and a little bit of our imagination. But now we actually have video from the surface of Mars, which is just mind blowing to me. But let's show that up here right now. And ooh, there we go. I could have us both on screen.
This is awesome. Here we go.
Sometimes I forget how this software works.
Dude, StreamYard, amazing.
Let's hit this play button here. So as you can see, it's in the bottom left corner. Its rotors are spinning. And it should be making the trip up. Oh, there it goes, up into the air. That is absolutely incredible. Like, we're watching video of an RC helicopter flying on Mars right now.
Literally.
And I mean, there it goes. I mean, that's just nuts to me. And the amount of precision, the way that, you know, software engineers were able to write in these algorithms to program in advance to make sure this thing does exactly what they need it to do. Because as the article states, and what we can get into in a moment here, is And I think it, I don't know if it, it should be coming back sometime soon. I don't know. There it
there
is.
There it is. Yep.
they had some troubles of their own on Earth test flighting this guy when they had direct control over it to kind of sort of kind of like pre-program something here and make sure it works on the surface of Mars. That's wild to me. That's absolutely wild. So let me pull my notes back up here and get back into the article. So like I just mentioned, what is that? I hear, I had something playing on my end. Could you guys hear that?
No, we're good. I think we're good.
All right. See, I accidentally stopped the screen sharing, but then the next video autoplayed on me. And
whoa, what's going on? Yeah,
that was quite startling.
The alarm on your face, I could sense how bad that was.
That was really loud, guys. I was like, what's going on? Okay, ooh, crisis averted. Back to the science here. So we have, and I'm gonna try to pronounce your name right as well, Mimi Ung or Mimi Aung, the helicopter's project manager at JPL, said this is the first time we've seen the algorithm for the camera running over a long distance. So there's also a camera attached to this helicopter that is collecting data, and that data is what they are using to, like they said, not only future Ingenuity flights, but potentially future other Mars aerial missions, potentially other Mars helicopters in the future. But they said that you can't do this inside a test chamber. And that's exactly what they had to do on Earth. Vacuum chambers at JPL are filled with wispy air, as they called it, primarily carbon dioxide, which is to simulate the thin Martian atmosphere. If you guys don't know, Martian gravity, I think, is like about a third that of Earth's. Its atmosphere is like 1% that of Earth's. Mars atmosphere is exceptionally thin, and there were people that even doubted them being able to pull this Ingenuity helicopter off at all because of how thin the atmosphere is. It's incredibly difficult to, you know, push on air with those rotor blades. As you can imagine, there's not much air to push on, so how are you going to generate lift? But they found a way to do it, and it's absolutely incredible. But to get back to the article here, it says they don't have room for even a tiny helicopter to move more than about 1.6 feet or half a meter in any direction inside of their vacuum chamber at JPL that they use to simulate the Martian conditions and test fly this.
Yeah.
So it posed a real challenge, and they had no way of testing the capabilities of the camera as it's intended to design. It says, would the camera track the ground as designed while moving at higher speeds on the red planet? There's no way of knowing.
Yeah.
Because there was no way of testing it here on Earth because of how small their test chamber was. So it's really incredible to kind of see scientists and engineers at work and use, you know, theory and everything that they know about the atmospheric conditions and the environment that the helicopter is in and program a way for this thing to work without being able to fully test it here on Earth, which I think is truly remarkable. So Michael, I want to throw it back at you. As you can see, I'm very excited. I love environmental test stuff. I've worked a job before that required a lot of like environmental testing, like simulating different environments for whatever technology you're developing. And I always thought that was just super fascinating to kind of simulate a foreign environment in a test lab or wherever you are. I don't know. That's something that's really mundane to most people that gets me really excited. So I want to ask you, was there anything that stood out in this article that excited you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you're going to play the video, but there is a video of them reacting to the third flight going, like actually being successful. And like you just mentioned, like going through that trial period of just the unknowing, not being able to truly, you know, use the technology the way it was intended or at least test it out is insane to think that they took this gigantic financial and also emotional gamble. I mean, you briefly touched on it, but it's like I there are people behind this doing these things that this is their life's work to try this out, to even get this far. So to have that moment, I mean, I can't imagine how satisfying that must be. And it is thrilling. I mean, even for me to watch not only the video of it taking off, but like I said, their reaction to that thing traveling half a football field, and they had no idea how far it would even go. It's really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And it is amazing to me how successful the Perseverance rover.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, excuse me. It's so far. A little burp come up there. Unprofessional. but no, not that I had any doubt in the great people at NASA or JPL. I actually have a few old coworkers of mine that work at JPL and got to work on some of this stuff. And I'm like really jealous of them, but it's truly amazing. And they did an amazing job. But it's not the Ingenuity helicopter is not the only thing that's been a great success for the latest Mars rover. NASA's Perseverance rover also, guys, well, it makes oxygen. That's right. It takes CO2 and converts it into oxygen. And they've done this on Mars for the first time. And this story that I'm bringing up here comes from Scientific American, guys. And as it says, NASA's Perseverance rover just notched another first on Mars, like we were saying, one that may help pave a way for astronauts to explore the red planet someday. The rover successfully used its MOXIE instrument to generate oxygen from thin carbon dioxide-dominated Martian atmosphere for the first time, demonstrating technology that could both help astronauts breathe and help propel the rockets that get them back home to Earth. Like, I mean, guys, if you don't know, oxygen is very combustible, like hydrogen, and to make water, and all of a sudden, and it's necessary for my health and not explosive anymore. That's crazy to me. Chemistry is nuts. But anyways, guys, that's something that I didn't even consider. I'm like, awesome. Like, you can make your own oxygen on Mars. Like, not only to breathe, but for rocket fuel to get you back home. And then that way, you don't have to lug all that rocket fuel with you to Mars, and you can save on weight. Because I got to tell you guys, when it comes to space travel and designing things to go into space, every single gram matters. Every single ounce matters. It is like so insane how specific they have to be to design things that go up into space in terms of weight. But anyways, to go even further into this, the MOXIE milestone occurred on Tuesday, April 20th, which was just one day after the Perseverance watched over its first Ingenuity helicopter flight, which we're already now on its third, if you can believe it, in a span of 6 days. And so, guys, I will just give a little brief rundown of how the MOXIE here works. The size of a toaster, the toaster size MOXIE, which is short for Mars Oxygen in situ resource utilization experiment. I don't know what in situ means. I probably should have Googled that earlier, but that's okay. I'm going to learn something new after this show. Here we go. Guys.
Yeah.
But the MOXIE produces oxygen from carbon dioxide, like we said, expelling carbon monoxide as a waste product, which we know is bad. But I mean, you're like pumping it into Mars a little bit at a time. What's the harm? I don't want to jump too far there. But we'll, yeah. the Martians won't mind, I swear. but the MOXIE team warmed the instrument up for 2 hours, and then they had it crank out oxygen for an hour. And within that hour, MOXIE produced 5.4 grams of oxygen. And that is about enough to keep an astronaut breathing easily, according to NASA, for 10 minutes. So it's an hour of work for 10 minutes of oxygen. But they said that this first effort isn't even MOXIE's full capabilities. In fact, it can generate about 10 grams of oxygen per hour, which will probably correlate to roughly 20 minutes of breathable oxygen. So 20 minutes of oxygen per hour of work, I'd say that's pretty good. To think if you initially show up on Mars and you do bring your own oxygen to like start off, you know, but then you like, are you show up at a facility on Mars that we've like, you know, started to make a little bit of a colony, perhaps like in The Martian, but hopefully it goes a little better. and maybe they have multiple MOXIE instruments generating oxygen full time for the site. That is crazy. That is truly remarkable, and we can go into that a little bit more. But to stop myself from rambling on about something I'm really excited about, I want to give Michael the chance to be excited about it as well. What were your thoughts on MOXIE's success? What did you learn for the first time reading this? Did anything really pique your interest that made you want to learn more, perhaps? How excited are you? Just tell me.
I'm so excited, Brandon, because one, we're one step closer to our helicopter trip now. I mean, yes. Come on.
Of course.
But also, I mean, I was just thinking, even when you were saying it, it just brought it back to mind that this is with one Moxie. Imagine it with two or three. Ooh. Obviously, the financial investment into that is insane, but we're not so far off from the Martian being a reality now. That's the crazy part about all this. It's not some fictionalized thing anymore. People are going to be watching that movie one day and saying that it's scientifically wrong because we've done it now. Like, it's crazy. But to think that this is also just part of this one mission and they're doing so much with the rover currently, the Perseverance currently, it's mind-blowing. It feels like the amount of science that is happening is way more exponential than the actual like singular mission that they were intended to go on, right? So, I mean, wow, this is the thing that's the size of a toaster and it's going to change like space travel forever. We may be able to get to and from Mars with this thing, like with a more advanced implementation of the Moxie. So it's insane. It's very exciting. Very, very exciting.
Yeah, it is, like I said, truly remarkable. And as we have here, there's a little part of the article about the Moxie and humanity's future on Mars, as it says. The Moxie itself cannot produce enough oxygen to make a difference for future exploration efforts. So that just sounds like it's just slapping us in the face of all of our excitement.
All of our fun is gone now.
But let's keep reading. Maybe it'll get better. For example, launching four astronauts off the Martian surface would likely require about 15,000 pounds or 7,000 kilograms of rocket fuel and 55,000 pounds or 25,000 kilograms of oxygen, according to NASA officials. So guys, about the whole rocket fuel, it does have a little like pair of, a parenthesis in here that just says rocket propellant consists of fuel and an oxidizer that helps it burn. So that's what they need the oxygen for in terms of the rocket fuel. It helps fuel itself, but it also acts as an oxidizer. If you care to know that little bit of detail, I figured I'd share after mentioning it earlier. Oh, please. But however, much larger Moxie successors could potentially be great exploration enablers, allowing Mars astronauts to live off the land rather than depend on costly and infrequent resupply from Earth. So there you have it, guys. Moxie, as it currently stands, the size of a toaster, you're going to need an unfeasible amount of these units to keep astronauts alive on the surface of Mars. However, there are going to be successors to the Moxie. There are going to be bigger, better, faster, stronger Moxies in the future that we are confident. I'm confident anyways. I hope the NASA's confident as well that they are going to be able to sustain human life on Mars and produce enough oxygen for the astronauts to breathe, the colonizers of Mars, if you will, and also to supply rocket fuel for them to safely make a trip home, which as nice as it is to breathe oxygen and fly helicopters on Mars, I think it's also going to be pretty nice to be able to make the trip back home. Michael, would you agree with my assessment?
Yeah, as much as our helicopter trip sounds like a lovely time, a lovely afternoon, mm-hmm. we have to get home at some point. And that's obviously the main the main topic of discussion here. Whatever the future incarnation of the Moxie is, it's going to change the world probably. I mean, this is already... The fact that we're able to create oxygen on a planet with none right now is just what the heck. I mean, 10 years ago, this would be a fictional thing as well. And now here we are. One step closer to astronauts getting to explore the surface for at least a little bit of time. It's crazy.
Yeah, it absolutely is incredible. And, to kind of touch on, being able to test these instruments and this technology here on Earth in hopes that it survives Mars and that it works on Mars, and we're seeing this level of success. I did read something that said that, I think the last time NASA technicians were even able to physically touch Moxie was 2 years ago when they put it into the rover as they were assembling it. It's absolutely incredible the amount of time it takes to very precisely and carefully assemble these Mars rovers. And you just gotta hope that whatever you built is gonna make the trip.
That's so crazy.
The trip to Mars. And fortunately for us and the amazing, talented people at NASA, we're seeing great success from these experiments. and yeah. something to get me really excited, because I, to be honest, I didn't even know about the Ingenuity helicopter or Moxie until they had already landed on the surface of Mars. So it is really, really exciting stuff. And I can't wait to see what the future brings. And we do have, right as we're wrapping up here, Ferris joining us in the chat, saying scientists are like Oprah with these underwear. Like, you get underwear, you get underwear,
there
you
it
get
is. Underwear. Everywhere the underwear the goes.
You got to put it in the soil and then we're That's taking the most important it back.
Part. Yeah.
But you get it temporarily. he also comments on my hair. Thank you, Ferris.
Oh yeah.
I was saying before the show, it is really difficult to manage. I do gotta get a haircut.
You look good, man. You look good.
If it's not a show if I don't bring up my messy hair at least once. but yeah, guys, I hope to bring back this special segment, Mars Mission Report, in the future. I'm sure that I will, because there are a lot of exciting scientific experiments going on Mars these days, and a lot of amazing data coming back to the people here on Earth faster than ever. It's almost too hard to keep up. 6 days ago, there was no flights on Mars, and now we're talking about our third. So it's absolutely incredible, and we'll just have to wait and see, guys. But with all that being said, that wraps up our show for today. Michael, thank you so much for joining me. I had an absolute blast talking science with you. You are like such an exciting person. I love the enthusiasm that you bring to any Thanks, show man. That you're on. Let the good people watching know, where can they find you online? Where can they see more of your wonderful face? How can they support you? Let them know. Plug everything you need to plug right now.
It's going to go down. Well, first of all, Brandon, thank you for having me. I'm a fan of the show, so it's an honor to be here sitting talking science with you. I'm glad that my excitement shone through. But you can find me, obviously, right down here. Brandon's got it already. Michael Chu for real on Twitter. You can find me at Letterboxd at Michael Chu, and not YouTube at also Michael Chu. Keep it nice and simple. Movie reviews, as Brandon mentioned, I'm the host of Chu on this. And he's actually going to be our next guest on Mother's Day. Our episode will be dropping.
Oh, wow.
Special Wonderful. Present to all your mothers out there.
Me I'll and let Brandon. My mom know so she can check it out.
Yeah, you got to let your moms know, guys. Me and Brandon will be talking on May 9th. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited for you guys to see it. We talk all things science some more. Get into our love for Halloween, and it was an absolute blast. So thank you again for having me on, Brandon, and thank you for coming on Chu on this. I can't wait for the folks to see it, man.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me on Chu on this. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
We're giving out thank yous now. Like,
I've had an absolute blast. Just give it out. You get a thank you. You get a thank you. Ferris will wait and see about you. You know. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, I really appreciate it. I know my mom's going to be super excited. I'm going to say, Mom, glad, I know it was a big deal when I was in the Schmodown, but now I'm on Chu on this. I've really made it. This is the big time. But in all seriousness, it really is a wonderful show. You're an incredible interviewer.
Thank you, man.
It was a wonderful experience. So guys, please go check out my episode of Chu on this when it does release, and check out all the other episodes that Mike has on his channel. It's a wonderful show. If you have a few moments to spare, and if you also maybe have a few moments to spare for me, you already have because you're watching. Thank you so much. You found me, youtube.com/BrandonHanna. This is where we're at. But you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHanna07. I also do have a Patreon, patreon.com/BrandonHanna. If you're looking to support the show, support myself and all my crazy endeavors that I'm trying to do in this wonderful space called the internet, I would really love to have you there. I'm really trying my best to build a community here on this channel of science lovers and movie lovers alike. And I think there is a beautiful harmony there. Much like in film physics, where we can try to make it all work. So check me out on all those places if you can. And thank you so much for joining us here today. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, hit that little notification bell. Leave a comment down below. Join in on the conversation. I want to know your thoughts on the underwear in the soil, the compostable plastics, the amazing technological achievements on Mars. I want to know about it all from you. And until next time, guys, thank you so much for taking time out of your day for this.